Good morning, and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's been 5 years now since the passage of the education reform law known as No Child Left Behind. It was designed to pressure schools to be more accountable for the performance of their students, particularly those from disadvantaged backgrounds. And the question that we'll be talking about this morning is, how well has it worked? Certainly, there are supporters of No Child Left Behind who argue that there has been an improvement of student performance across the country and that No Child Left Behind is responsible. However, at the same time, there are a number of groups, a very long list of organizations, policy organizations, educational ones, religious ones, civil rights organizations, community development organizations, that say that they have a problem with the way that No Child Left Behind was structured and implemented, and they say that if it's truly going to be effective, some changes need to be made. And in fact, this year, the law does come up for reauthorization, and there are some questions about whether or not it will be reauthorized at all, and if so, is it possible some changes will be made? This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll be talking with Robert Schaefer. He's the public education director with an organization called National Center for Fair and Open Testing, FEST for short. And it is one of this long list of organizations that have some real concerns about how No Child Left Behind was put together and how it has been implemented. Among other things, the organization argues that NCLB is based on a false assumption that punishing schools for low test scores will indeed drive school improvement. As we're talking this morning with our guest, questions and comments from people who are listening are welcome. We only ask that people are brief so that we can keep the program moving and get in as many different people as possible. But, of course, anybody who's listening is welcome to join the conversation. The number, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Let me tell you just a little bit more about our guest, Robert Schaefer. He has served as Public Education Director of Fair Test since its founding in 1985. Before that, he was an editorial writer at the NBC TV affiliate in Boston. He was also Research Director for the Massachusetts Legislature's Joint Committee on Human Services and Elderly Affairs. He was also a talk show host for a regional NPR station and a writer for an alternative weekly paper. He also worked several years as a research assistant at the Education Research Center of MIT, where he was an undergraduate and grad student. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. Mr. Schaefer, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we appreciate it. You know, one of the things that I was struck by in trying to do some background reading and thinking about No Child Left Behind was that some of the research, some of the opinion polling data that was a result of people going out and inquiring, doing surveys, asking people what they thought about No Child Left Behind. And apparently, a significant number of people said they didn't feel that they understood it well enough to have an opinion of whether it was good or bad. So, to me, that suggests that probably right here at the very beginning, we should say, I should give you the opportunity in the most basic kind of way to say, what is No Child Left Behind? Or what was it intended to do?
Well, first of all, it's not surprising that many members of the public don't understand the law. Most members of Congress don't. The actual law is more than 900 pages of a finely written small print legislative text, and it includes many, many different sections. The most important parts of the No Child Left Behind law are the congressional delegation declaration, and signed by President Bush, that all children in the United States will be proficient in math and in reading by the year 2014, no matter what. And No Child Left sets up a series of tests and punishments which it claims, based on no research, will result in children magically becoming proficient, all children, by that time. The key component is a notion called annual yearly progress, which is the amount of gain a school and each demographic group within that school must make each year to attain the goal of full proficiency. So, for example, if in a school 30% of kids are proficient at the beginning of the process in 2002, and they all need to be proficient by 2014, they have to increase their total proficiency by 70% over 12 years. It's about 6% a year in every ethnic group. If they fail to attain that goal, there are a series of unproven punishments that the federal government believes are going to make those kids and teachers and schools perform better. They range from a provision that allows public funds to be diverted to private, unaccountable tutoring firms to boost test scores, right up to shutting down schools that don't produce adequate yearly progress.
There are, for those people who support No Child Left Behind, they have pointed to some increase in student performance over this time, and that they say that this legislation is responsible for that. There are other people who raise questions about whether or not that really was due to NCLB, and in fact, they raise questions about who's doing the testing, what kind of testing are they using, what are the standards, and perhaps raise questions about whether, in fact, it has that improvement that the supporters point to has, in fact, occurred. Can you find anything to say, anything positive to say about outcomes after 5 years now of No Child Left Behind?
Well, to be truthful, the claims that the administration and its supporters make about No Child Left Behind positive impact are at best flights of fancy and most likely outright fabrications. For example, they point to small gains in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or the nation's educational thermometer that's given about every 5 years. Over the period 1999 to 2004, and claim that that is attributable to No Child Left Behind. But No Child Left Behind was not signed until 2002. We just marked its fifth anniversary, and did not go into effect until 2003. So unless schools are very sharp and figured out 4 years in advance that No Child Left Behind was going to be passed and somehow improve students, it drives cause and effect backwards to claim that No Child Left Behind is responsible for it. I think there have been some positives in No Child Left Behind. And Fair Test, for example, has long argued that schools and districts and states need to disaggregate, separately report the performance of different ethnic groups. What happens in some schools is that the fact that some kids from some groups are being left behind is hidden behind high average scores. But you didn't need No Child Left Behind to make that happen. So the focus on minority, low-income student improvement has been intensified by No Child Left Behind.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose that one of the criticisms that critics of No Child Left Behind have made is that schools, as the legislation calls for, schools have set these targets for student performance, but then have found ways to meet those targets by essentially finding ways to exclude underperforming students. That is, they've fudged the data.
One of the things that happened before and unfortunately after No Child Left Behind is that politicians who run local schools, just like the politicians who make laws in Washington, find ways to game the system. The biggest loophole of all is in the way No Child Left Behind defines proficient, which is it doesn't with a national standard. In fact, each state is allowed to determine what that proficiency is that students will have to obtain, all students will have to obtain by 2014. Some states have lowered the bar. Other states have bars that are substantially lower than neighboring states. So, in fact, proficiency turns out to mean absolutely nothing. Within that, schools have a variety of techniques to make their scores look better without actually helping kids. They include discouraging kids who are going to score low from taking the test, retaining kids so that kids taking the eighth grade test are, in fact, in some cases, 16 or 17 years old and have been through the same curriculum for 3 years, and other gamesmanship that results in scores not having much meaning.
You point at another one of the criticisms that's made, that is that every state gets to set its own standards, and there can be a big difference from one state to the next. And so some people have argued that there ought to be national standards, and this is something that I think that the White House, the administration, has very strenuously argued against. Do you think that it would be a good idea for there to be national standards for student performance?
Not mandatory testing standards, because that would result in essentially a national curriculum and a one-size-fits-all approach to education. Yes, if national standards mean what some professions like math and English have done, which have laid out by the people who are actually practitioners in the field of teaching, not by politicians, basic outlines of what kids should learn and be able to demonstrate they know. So, yes, voluntary national standards is something that Fair Test has supported.
Let me just very quickly again introduce our guest, Robert Schaefer. He's public education director of Fair Test, known as in its longer version, the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, which is, as the name of the organization would suggest, concerned about standardized testing and how it is used. And we're talking here this morning about No Child Left Behind. It's been 5 years since that was signed into law and continues to be very controversial, with people on the one hand arguing that it has helped to drive student performance and others saying that there were some real problems with the way that it was structured and implemented, and for that reason changes need to be made. And certainly Fair Test is one of this, as I said at the beginning, really a long list of organizations, educational organizations and religious ones and civil rights organizations, that say that they have problems with No Child Left Behind. And there's some things that they say need to be changed. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. I think that in education reform the last, I don't know how long now, one of the big buzzwords, the things that people keep talking about, is accountability. And that seems to be what this was designed to do. That is, the idea is that you set high standards, you say that you expect students to meet them, you have to have some kind of objective means of assessing whether or not they are. So you test, and then not only do you give that kind of information to the parents, so you have to give that information to the community as a way of saying not only to parents but to everyone whether or not the school is doing its job. And it seems to be, as a basic concept, it seems to be pretty good. Do you have a problem with that, with the actual, this actual basic idea that says we expect schools to do their job, we're going to set high standards, and we're going to say to the schools, you have to have a way to demonstrate to us that the students are meeting those standards, and if not, there should be some kind of consequence. We can't really continue to let this, give the schools a pass year after year if students aren't meeting the standards. Is there something that's wrong with that?
In principle, it makes sense. In the practice, as the law is written, No Child Left Behind, in fact, undermines those very goals. It is as if we wanted to improve the physical education and stamina of our kids in public schools, and said, the federal government said, the way we're going to do it is that by 2014, every kid's going to be able to jump over a 6-foot-high bar, without regard to whether that's a plausible standard for all kids, whether there are some kids who, for physical reasons, can't jump 6 feet high. But we're going to punish schools if they don't get kids over that bar and in increasing numbers every year. The basic assumptions of No Child Left Behind in terms of 100% proficiency and the way to attain it are not based on any available research data and end up producing results that undermine the larger goal of improving performance. The more than 100 organizations with whom Fair Test is working for NCLB reform and overhaul, which include groups like the Children's Defense Fund, which coined the term Leave No Child Behind, and groups like the NAACP and major Latino organizations, parent teachers associations, religious groups, the National Education Association, agree that the fundamental notion of No Child Left Behind, which is that you improve performance by a test and punish method, is wrong and counterproductive. That instead we need to replace it with a system that finds out why schools are not bringing kids up to higher levels of performance and provides them with the assistance they need to do it. Using again the analogy of kids not being able to jump over a 6-foot bar, is the problem because the coaching is bad? Is the problem because the kids are handicapped? Do they not have the proper athletic facilities and equipment? Do they have poor nutrition? All of which may be reasons that they can't jump over the bar. But simply raising the bar and saying, jump over it or you'll be punished, doesn't do the job.
Well, let's talk with the caller. We have someone here standing by in Champaign. I'd like to join the conversation in our on our line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I'm really interested in hearing your analysis in terms of the ideological implications that this law came into effect, how it came into effect. So how would you describe the ideologies that this is based on, if it's not necessarily based on research itself? What does No Child Left Behind say about the ability to interpret ideologies as a form of literacy? And, I want to just contextualize this in the sense that this particular president has constantly said that we're involved in an ideological struggle of our time. So does No Child Left Behind actually provide for the ability for students to unearth the ideologies that are around us?
That's a very complicated question because the law is so complicated. In fact, the No Child Left Behind law as it now stands is a result of a grand compromise between Democratic and Republican politicians. The co-sponsors of the law in the Congress included Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts and Congressman George Miller from the San Francisco Bay Area, generally viewed as liberals, as well as extreme conservatives on the other end of the spectrum, and it was signed into law by President Bush. It reflects a common belief among those sets of people that the way to improve schools is raise the bar and yell. But it's not clear that that reflects a coherent ideology. One of the most interesting things is that to look at the opposition to No Child Left Behind, which also spans the ideological spectrum for many of Fairtet's allies, which would be viewed as progressive reform groups like the NAACP, to places like the entire state, the state legislature in Utah, which is the reddest of all states, the most Republican voting state in the country, which is also opposed to No Child Left Behind for very different reasons. So it is not a question where it breaks down simply along normal ideological lines.
Would you say that the tests themselves that are being used as standards for measurement are ideologically driven?
I think they're philosophically driven. First of all, the states differ from state, the tests differ from state to state. They all reflect a common notion that one size fits all, a largely multiple choice items can accurately and fairly measure all students' capabilities to demonstrate their knowledge. I mean, that reflects a notion which is not well supported in most of the educational literature, that there are kids who, for whatever reason, are test anxious, who don't do well on multiple choice formats, who don't do well under pressure, yet can perform quite well in real world settings. So there is an ideology of the standardized test, to be sure.
And then are there tests or are there methods in teaching itself that help students develop this ability to uncover ideologies?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by uncover ideologies. There are examples, good long-term concrete examples, of how to develop schools with high standards and accountability. For example, one of Fairtest board members, Deborah Meyer, who's the first public school teacher to win a MacArthur Genius Award, established a school in Harlem in New York City where there were very clear standards and kids had to demonstrate they met them not by taking tests but by actual performance, doing science projects, defending their analyses of literature before panels of members of their community, their parents, faculty, and the business arena as well. So that's even a higher standard of real accountability than what the law brings.
So you're talking about performance-based assessment?
Yes, performance-based assessment rather than simple multiple-choice testing.
So those are actually evaluated by actual human beings rather than, you know, Scantrons.
Absolutely, but we measure many complex human performances using just that manner of skilled, trained judges. For example, many Olympic events, from ice dancing to slalom skiing to other types of activities, are rated fairly and accurately and credibly by skilled judges. We know what high quality looks like, and judges can rate it, understanding that there is diversity in what high quality, not just one size fits none.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's just that these standardized tests don't seem to be have the ability to measure higher order thinking, evaluative type, you know, analysis, and I think that that in itself is plays a function on society, on students, on the type of community that is being developed under these types of tests that we currently have.
Well, very true. In fact, one of the many flaws of the No Child Left Behind law is that the funding that the administration promised to go with it so that states could develop higher quality tests never materialized, so that most states have using off-the-shelf, multiple-choice, very simplified exams, not performance assessments. And in many cases, states have dumbed down their assessments to focus on the narrow set of skills that No Child Left Behind mandates. It's in states like Maryland, it's made their assessment systems poorer than they were before the law passed.
Okay. Well, thank you
so
much.
All right, thanks. So in case people haven't got the idea, your organization in particular, because it has this focus on testing, one of your concerns is this reliance on standardized tests, the fact that an awful lot of time and effort goes into preparing students for the test, and that you're arguing that not only does that it has an impact on the kind of education they receive, but also that the tests themselves don't really do a very good job of measuring in a rounded kind of sense that student, who she is, what they know, what they don't know, and who they are. And that even what has happened with NCLB is that it has locked us even more into this reliance on this kind of standardized machine-scored test.
Indeed, very well said. And the evidence from classrooms indicates that, particularly in low-scoring schools, it ends up dumbing down curriculum into worksheets and practice tests, what are called a drill-and-kill curriculum, that ends up turning off to learning the very kids who most need help.
And it is possible, although perhaps it's more difficult, maybe more expensive, it is possible to construct and administer a kind of a test, a kind of an assessment of that student,
right,
that goes beyond these things that all of us took when we were kids, where you have a piece of paper and you color in a little. They ask you a question and they give you four choices and you color it in a little circle, and that's what you do.
Indeed. There are a number of very well-developed performance assessments that can demonstrate whether a child has mastered a topic. For example, if you want to know that a kid can read, the best way to know that is to have the child read to you from a book and ask that child questions about what he or she just read. And there's a system called the Learning Record, for example, that you can use to rate that reading ability. But it's actually doing the task rather than filling in bubbles about it.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone else in a nearby community, Belgium, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. I'm sure that we've spoken about this before. But half of my family is involved in this industry, and this does not set well, okay? Does not set well at home. I mean, when any two educators get together, you guarantee that this topic comes up, and they start talking about it, and they go on and on and on about it. And it just seems to me that we're missing something, too. I mean, it's very important to take care of the unperforming child. Educators spend an enormous amount of time trying to take care of these less than well-performing children, and they really don't take care of what's needed by probably the larger portion of the children, at least where my loving wife spends her time. The group that is being tended the most is a smaller group, and the group that is being left behind are really the larger group, which is the group that can excel faster than what you're talking about. They're already doing better, but they're being held back by the fact that we have to do these other tests. We don't have time to do more in other areas to improve your education. Seems that we're putting the wrong direction on these things, the cart before the horse, or I don't know quite how to put it, but I'm sure you gather what I'm trying to say.
And agree with exactly what you and your wife have said. The truth is that teachers are the most articulate voices about what's wrong with No Child Left Behind because they see what it's doing to their classrooms. what happens when you have to get all kids over proficient, or it's an increasing percentage each year, is that there's a tendency to ignore the kids who are already over that bar, and to focus particularly on kids who are so-called bubble kids, who are right at the point where perhaps they, with luck or a little more assistance, they can clear that hurdle this year. So you ignore both the kids over the bar and the kids well under the bar, focusing only to boost that average test score to meet the requirements so your school escapes punishment for another year. That's a very bad, perverse set of incentives from the federal government to how our schools should be nurturing all the types of talent that they have. And yes, many organizations that are concerned about the education of gifted and talented kids are concerned that No Child Left Behind forces the schools to focus on testing, which many of these kids don't need. Sometimes 6, 8, 9 days of the academic year are devoted to testing and analysis of tests, and not to enriching curriculum.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thanks for the call. Other questions and comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And again, let me introduce the guest for this hour. Our guest is Robert Schaefer. He is the Public Education Director of FairTest. That's the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, and has that position since 1985 when the group was set up. Before that, he was an editorial writer at an NBC television affiliate in Boston. He also was research director for the Massachusetts Legislature's Joint Committee on Human Services and Elderly Affairs. He was also the host of a talk show on a regional NPR station there and a writer for an alternative weekly paper. And we're talking about No Child Left Behind, which is now 5 years old and is up for reauthorization. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Some of what I read about this suggests that, as I said, that it's up for reauthorization this year, suggests that, in fact, it may not happen and that it might even be put off until the 2008 presidential election. Do you think that, in fact, No Child Left Behind will be reauthorized this year by Congress?
We can't afford to rely on those predictions that it will not come up this year, even though many experts in Washington think that it is so complicated and that there are so many other pressing issues before it in the legislative pipeline that they won't get it. They won't be able to get to it. Our coalition, the Forum on Educational Accountability, which grew out of this joint statement now signed by 102 national organizations, is moving forward on the assumption that the reauthorization process will begin with hearings and possibly redrafting the legislature this year. Political realists, however, contend that it is so controversial and the administration is so tied up in other controversies that they may want to put this off until there is a new occupant of the White House.
Just to go back to one other point real quick, and then I promise I have a couple of people who are here holding I want to get to, that goes to this issue of how it is you serve the needs of the great mix of students that you're going to get in any given classroom. I'm sure that all teachers will tell you that it's always going to be a mixed bag and that you look at your students, however many of them you have, you know that there are some that are going to be at the high end of performance, there are some that are going to be at the lower end of performance, and probably most of them are going to be somewhere in the middle. And the criticism, as the last caller made and other people would make, is that what NCLB has done is that it's really put a lot of pressure on the teachers to try to look to the needs of the kids who are on the low-performing end and perhaps neglecting the needs of the others. I think, though, the criticism would be made by those people who support it, saying that in the past, we were neglecting the needs of the kids who were on the bottom end, the lower performing students. And the only thing that could really get schools to pay attention to those students and how they're doing is to put pressure on them and say, look, you have failed these students. And the only thing that we can think of to make sure that you actually more successful to say, look, you've got to set standards and you've got to make sure that they meet them. And again, going back to what we talked about, the issue of consequences, saying that if you don't, there will be consequences. I guess I wonder how you speak to those people who would make that criticism that said before we were neglecting the needs of the kids who were on the bottom.
In fact, before No Child Left Behind was in place, many states already had their own assessment systems that did focus on the performance of a variety of groups. What was not working then and now is the notion that if you set up a system in which you assume the way to help low-achieving kids improve is simply to set up a bunch of tests and hurdles that they have to pass in the way states had it, they had to pass in order to be promoted to the next grade or to graduate from high school or for their school to be accredited, that would magically transform the performance of those schools, and it didn't work. If the test and punish ideology actually functioned, as its proponents said, Alabama and Mississippi, states which have had high-stakes testing systems for more than two decades, would be among the best states educationally in the nation. Now, as they were 20 years ago, they're still at the bottom of the barrel. The problem that kids bring to classrooms and that lead to low performance is not a function primarily of the lack of high standards. It is because many kids enter classrooms in our country way behind. Their parents have not had the opportunity. They haven't been exposed to books, to learning, to child care. In many cases, they suffer from malnutrition, lead poisoning, and other factors that leave them way behind the starting line. And we're expecting our teachers to work magic in suddenly overcoming all of those deficits that those kids bring. There are ways to help such kids, and many schools have shown it, but it's not about testing and punishing. It's finding out why each individual kid is not proficient and meeting that kid's needs. In some cases, it's eye exams and getting kids glasses so they can actually see the work. In other cases, it's dealing with undiagnosed problems like dyslexia. In some cases, it's getting them private tutors to help them with reading and developing basics, but it's not sending them off to some unaccountable profit-making firm to be drilled in multiple-choice tests, which is what No Child Left Behind does.
Well, let's talk with some other callers here. In Urbana, a couple of them. First one is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've enjoyed this conversation and found it really informative. And I just wanted to comment that as a teacher, I was a teacher and then I was home with my children for 10 years. 2 years ago, went back into the public schools. And just my experience was the change is just dramatic, and how much of a difference that the emphasis on testing has made in teaching. And I didn't find it positive. What I heard over and over again is just teachers who felt discouraged saying things like, we used to do this unit, this kind of study, we used to branch into these creative projects back before No Child Left Behind. We don't have time for that now. We have to take out time every day for ISET testing, and we don't have time to do the kinds of things that made teaching enjoyable and learning enjoyable for the kids. And I just really see a connection there, not just that the children are experiencing discouragement, but I think the teachers who went into it because they wanted to be creative and innovative and progressive, a lot of those people, I think, are very discouraged. And if it continues this way, I think it could really affect the kind of person that chooses to go into education. So that was just my comment.
Well, Mr. Schaefer, you want to reflect on that?
That's what we hear from teachers all across the nation, and the data indicate that what No Child Left Behind and state testing programs like the ISAT are doing are driving the best teachers out of the profession or out of the classrooms where they're most needed. Here's why. If you were a very good teacher, would you stick with a school which was constantly being labeled a failure by your government, where you're saying you're leaving kids behind, or would you go to a place where the kids, and often because of demographic reasons, are already over the bar, go to the Lake Forest of the world, where you're not going to be confronted with being denigrated as being non-performing because you haven't taken kids up over the bar. teachers are leaving the places where we most need them and going to the places where it's easier because the rewards are greater.
Yeah, that's exactly what I found. And actually, I lasted for 2 years, and now I'm back in school focusing more on early intervention. So I really appreciated your comments about just the importance of that and how this all fits together. We really need to be focusing on what's going on in the in the preschool years and its relation to all of this. So thank you. It's been very refreshing.
Well, thank you for your efforts.
Right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line number two. This is also someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hey, great. I wanted to criticize No Child Left Behind by saying something that our local public school has done so well with my son, who's a sophomore this year. He took a class that a teacher worked very hard to prepare on American history through music and film, in which they watched Full Metal Jacket and Rebel Without a Cause and listened to the music of Chuck Berry and read essays with a historical background. Very rigorous class, very demanding, very high standard, but it was so engaging to my son and taught so many things that are not measured on a standardized test. Can you critically analyze the viewpoint of a film that you're watching? Can you make an argument in a class in putting forward your point with other students? And more important, it just engaged my son, and he was curious and liked school. He liked the class. And it's just so frustrating that something like that, where a teacher's worked very hard and deserves a lot of credit, you wish that that were measured as well.
That's a very good point. Actually, it illustrates one of the problems with No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind only applies to grades K through 8. It requires every kid to be tested every year from grades 3 to 8 in both math and English, and occasionally in science, and once in high school. But because its dictates do not generally apply to grades 10, 11, and 12, it hasn't had the same damaging consequences in education. Though, in fact, the Bush administration last year tried to get Congress to go for extending No Child Left Behind into each of the high school grades, and that proposal was dead on arrival on Capitol Hill because of so many people seeing the negative consequences. So we've been lucky that high schools, for the most part, still can pursue courses that, the words you use, engage, curious, love of learning, that's what we should be teaching in our schools, not drilling them to do multiple choice problems.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll talk with someone in Kankakee. Kankakee, line number four. Hello.
The consensus used to be that responsibility for education and educational standards was local. The trend has been for the states and even for the United States to attempt to take over these functions. Does responsibility for education and educational standards belong with localities, with the states, or with the United States, or with some other entity, or with a combination of entities? Thank you.
A very good question, and that's one of the reasons why you see opposition to No Child Left Behind from many conservatives, is that it in fact reflects federal intervention taking over the rules of the game in public school classrooms, even though the federal government on average provides about 7% of the funding for local education. The question is a little beyond fair test scope. We're an organization concerned with promoting high-quality assessments and eliminating those that damage educational quality and equity, but my personal opinion is that it needs to be some mix, and that No Child Left Behind skews the process far too much towards Washington and away from a local community where people can get engaged in their local school and figure out what it is their kids should be learning and how they should be performing. Voluntary national standards to benchmark what local schools are doing are a way to assure high quality across the nation. We are concerned that in the history of this country, there have been some schools, particularly in the Deep South, but not exclusively there, where local control has meant ignoring the needs of substantial numbers of kids, and that's not acceptable either.
We have just touched, at least in passing, on the resource issue, and certainly people know that there is a tremendous difference in the amount of resources that particular communities can put behind their students with the schools, for example, just in this state. If you look at schools downstate, look at schools in rural areas, and look at those schools in the collar counties and those places where they have the strongest tax base and they spend tremendous amounts of money per student, and then other places where they simply don't have the money. And there is a big concern that that gap, we need to do something to address that gap because it connects directly with student performance. One of the criticisms of No Child Left Behind has also been that there was a certain level of funding to try to help schools do better that was promised but was not forthcoming. To what extent do you think that we do really come down here to a kind of a resource issue, and in spite of the kind of criticisms that some people make about throwing money at problems, that really that part of the problem for a lot of schools is that they simply don't have the resources to put into the education of the kids?
It's a very important part of the problem. The promise of additional money to go along with additional federal mandates is one of the reasons that liberals like Senator Kennedy and others supported No Child Left Behind. When that money was not forthcoming, they found out that they had bought into a political deal in which they got the sanctions without the tools needed to come up to those levels. There is a direct correlation on any test we've ever seen between community wealth and family wealth and test scores. Typically, in most states, those schools that do not make adequate yearly progress are the schools serving neighborhoods in which there are substantial numbers of poor and immigrant students, and where the schools do not have the extra resources that are needed to bring those kids up to the same level as their more affluent peers. We work with organizations, Campaign for Fiscal Equity, for example, that recognizes that giving kids in inner city at Chicago and Lake Forest or Evanston exactly the same amount of money in schools is not sufficient because the kids from the well-to-do communities have had so many opportunities before they enter school and while they're in school for other educational enrichment that they still will be way far ahead unless additional resources are poured into meeting the special needs of low-income communities.
Let's talk with another caller, and this is someone in Charleston, and that's line 3. Hello.
Yes. Historically, education were for the elites in ancient times and in modern times for the bourgeois class, which still, the Ivy League college and all those sorts of things that cater to people with money, and then public education, you know, which came later, address the masses, and industry could not tolerate an illiterate or a class of people who were going to work in industry who could not read or write or understand the using of machinery, and that lagged, and which is what I think this program is about, that there. The class nature of the public school, where everyone is treated the same, you know, which the right wing loves, you know, well, communism is bad, but they treat the school system as if it were a common sort of ground when it really is not. And if we continue this, and then people like George Bush, who has stabbed the education in the back and lowered it, and you think of a black, Hispanic, or an Oriental neighborhoods and people such as that who, and myself, I were a child of the 30s and started school in 1940, ragged and dirty, and did not have the benefit of a home life that was worth talking about. And yet I were thrown in with kids, you know, from different economic classes. No rich, of course, but these public schools that sucked in all the people were... it was discriminatory from the beginning, and the ugliness of those situations, you know, I'm an old man, and I still remember. So, but that, I think the elitism of education and the continuity of that is the trouble with public education. Thanks, David, and I'll hang up.
Okay. Well, I don't. You have some thoughts about that?
Well, Fairtenth is committed to universal public education and to high-quality universal education. If we should stop giving lip service to the notion that our schools are all going to be equally and adequately able to bring kids up to high levels of achievement and actually get on with doing it. And that's going to require, in many cases, investing money and spending it smarter.
Let's talk with another caller. This is someone on a cell phone, and it's line one. Hello.
Yes, I think you got some excellent points, and the caller that called in earlier talked about the creative process that they used with music and things of that nature. I think one of the things that need to be done as an ex-teacher for different levels is that you have to connect with the students on their interest level and then use that vehicle to strengthen the basics that we want to accomplish through the testing and in a creative fashion so that it isn't all rote learning. But the finances have to be there. I think community service that could be done, maybe at a low cost. There's a lot of people that perhaps would volunteer to help tutor students on very simple processing, multiplication tables and things of this nature, vocabulary. But I think you're absolutely right, but I think that the creative process can be applied in with this No Child Left Behind testing procedure as long as we hit the main points that we want our children to be able to make change and then add and understand basic concepts when they get out of school. I'd like to hear your opinions. Thanks.
Okay.
All true. However, another element of No Child Left Behind, which we haven't talked about, which is the Reading First program, goes exactly against what you described, which is connecting with kids in terms of their interests. Instead, that imposes, Reading First part of the law, imposes kind of a formulaic notion of how reading is supposed to be developed, and in many cases, a mandatory set of texts that are used that are not about reading, but are about memorizing nonsense words and turn kids off to the love of learning. So the top-down, bureaucratic, formulaic, one-size-fits-all mandates of No Child Left Behind end up hurting the very goals, which are well-shared, which is to help those kids who are far behind and bring them up to a level of proficiency.
You know, we're coming down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left. It strikes me that for at least 20 years, probably more than that, we've been having a fairly intense discussion in this country about school reform, about the concerns that public schools were underperforming, that the students weren't doing as well as we want them to and as they need to, and that we should do something about it. And it also strikes me that we're probably, per capita, we may have the biggest ratio of research to students in terms of education of anywhere in the world. We could build up an enormous stack of books and papers and research about what happens in the classroom and what contributes to student performance. And yet, it seems that now over this more than two-decade conversation we have been having on school reform, we haven't seemed to have gotten any place. Why is it that school reform seems to be an underperforming enterprise?
Well, first of all, you're correct that there are many studies about what works, and those studies have been largely ignored by the politicians and their campaign contributors who have driven the making of education policy, both at the federal level in terms of No Child Left Behind and at the state level. It was not teachers and educational researchers who wrote these laws, but politicians, the Business Roundtable, and others. And quite frankly, they don't know what they're talking about. They leapt on unproven formulas and cheap magic bullet approaches such as testing our way to success, and they don't work. They actually don't work in business either.
So what it now, again, just real quick, the possibility that either the No Child Left Behind will simply expire, it will be reauthorized, or that I suppose what you would like to see is that, yes, it would be reauthorized, but with the kind of changes you've been talking about.
The chances that No Child Left Behind will be allowed to expire this year are probably very slim. Most likely, Congress will simply extend it and postpone the debate about how much it needs to be overhauled. There is widespread agreement that some changes need to be made. Precisely where will be the result of the political process, and that's why we would urge, Fairtest would urge all listeners to let their elected officials, particularly their U.S. representatives and senators, know of their concerns. I know, for example, Senator Obama, who is now a national figure, has expressed some concerns about it and will have a major platform. Those kinds of elected officials need to hear from their constituents. Material folks need to make that case. They're available on our website at www.fairtest.org.
All right. Our guest, Robert Schaefer, is Public Education Director of Fair Test. That's the National Center for Fair and Open Testing. Mr. Schaefer, thank you very much.
Thank you, David, and thanks for your callers and listeners. Mm-hmm.